as well as he's currently collaborating with makeup artists as well as shoe and jewellery designers, and in fact collaborated with Paulina as well, right?
Yeah.
You worked
yeah.
on...
He helped me with my final collection.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So. Collaboration of sorts.
Collaboration of sorts. Oh no, we collaborated.
Yeah.
We yeah. So, that is the topic for today. Just before we move on, do you want to tell us anything else about yourselves that I haven't mentioned?
I'm currently doing my MA at CSM, so I'm in my final year of my master's, and that's what I'm doing right now. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I'm in my final year of knit, and that's what I'm doing right now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I'm also I'm on knitwear on the MA.
Yeah.
So I did knitwear with BA.
Knitters.
Yeah.
So here we go.
Yeah. So the busiest people, essentially,
yeah.
on any of the fashion textiles pathways.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So both under a lot of pressure. So, and today I've kind of explained this to the specialist students before, but all the speakers that I'm getting to come in are giving us their time for free. So big thank you to both these guys, and the other speakers that we have throughout the contextual practice pathway. That'll be the case. Well, so thank you for turning up, those of you that are here. So, just another little bit about you, because it's just the best possible image. So this is an image from British Vogue featuring both Paulina and Chet. So, do you want to tell us a bit about this?
So, the year before Chet interned at Margiela, I also interned at Margiela during my placement year. And we both interned on the artisanal team, so we get to work like very one-on-one with John Galliano, which was like really great, and it's an experience.
Yeah.
And I think it was last year, like fall last year,
yeah.
John contacted all of his ex-interns, and he was doing this shoot for British Vogue, which kind of documented the insides and out of the process of like, you know, what happens inside the studio. So he really wanted to kind of commemorate all the interns that worked for him. So that's how this image came. The reason why I'm not in the image, I'm in a screen in the image, because I was actually in the middle of applying for my visa for my master's. So I didn't have a passport and I couldn't leave the country. So I had to send in a selfie to be in the picture. John was very insistent that I had to be there. And I was like, oh, it's illegal. I don't have any documentation. But that's how that happened. I don't know, you were there. So
it was incredible. Yeah. It was just like, we were like, oh, when's Ali? When's Paulina showing up? And then they just roll up this TV screen with her face on it. And I was like, close enough, you know?
Yeah.
And maybe, how was that experience there? How long were you interning there?
I guess just kind of same, yeah, six, 7 months.
Yeah.
We interned around this for like the same season.
Yeah,
as well.
Yeah, both fall.
Yeah, fall, winter.
Yeah.
I was fall, winter 17, and you were fall, winter 18.
Fall, winter 18.
Yeah,
I think so.
Yeah, it's like all of blur, but it was
yeah,
that was really great. I always wanted to work for John, and I really love Margiela, and it's like very in line with like the kind of work that I do. And that was my first ever kind of big internship that I ever did, so it was really exciting. It was really intense.
Yeah.
What were you doing there?
Everything.
So hands-on, not just
yeah.
the bullshit work, but
you like delve
yeah.
into dirty work.
It was very. I mean, John is really inspired by you know, like youth, and
yeah.
he really wants to like tap into like the minds of like, you know, people
yeah.
who are currently, I don't know, involved. Like
yeah,
I guess
yeah.
students and stuff, we have a bit of a perspective. He's been doing this for so long, and the designers there have also been doing this for so long. It's kind of nice to have that like fresh energy. So they'd give us, you know, research projects or like textile projects. So we would do sampling. And there's this whole, they had this like intern room where they had loads of materials which you could grab from and
yeah.
just experiment. So it was very experimental in the beginning stages, and then kind of when the collection gets decided, you know, you get like projects that you.
Yeah.
work on.
Yeah.
Like for example, when I was there, I had a project, like John assigned me this dress to work on, and it was this fully crocheted dress, so I designed all of the like crochet and the motifs and the stitches for that dress, which was produced by like hand by these women, which was amazing. It took 3,000 hours to crochet, which was crazy. You know, it was kind of stuff like that. So it was really great. It's one of the few internships, especially in the kind of bigger brand, where you do a lot of hands-on work. Because what I found from like my friends who were interning at the same time in Paris, like if you're interning at Louis Vuitton or I don't know. It's a lot of computer work.
Yeah,
it's a lot of like CAD.
Just like flats every
and
day.
And coffee.
Yeah, getting coffee. And like,
yeah.
It's very just like you sit there like scrolling through random stuff and like researching. But like at Marcello, it was like so nice. It just validated my love of textiles. And like you get to like Paulina said, like you get assigned like a look or like a garment and like you just work on it. And so you feel like you're part of the collection.
Mm.
And then like John like tells you what to do and he like sort of like it almost talks to you as if you're a real designer, you know what I mean, not an intern. And so it's really, really nice and really validating.
So
there.
I think there are kind of two sides to people's kind of perspective on interning.
Mm.
Were you paid firstly?
Yeah, we were paid.
You were paid?
The bare minimum.
Yeah.
The bare minimum to survive. Yeah.
not even enough for rent, but luckily there's like kind of programs that you have that work alongside with you that give you a bit of funding.
Yeah.
So I had Erasmus.
Yeah.
You had
Erasmus
as well.
Yeah.
And that gives you like there's like an extra 500 euros a month on top of what you're getting paid.
Okay.
And
that is feasible.
So then it's livable.
Yeah.
It's pretty hardcore though. You're really like
skinned.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think there were some perspectives that, you know, you were doing so much, which is amazing.
Mm.
But then there's other views that, you know, you're giving all of your ideas and your creative energy to something that you're not normally you're not being recognised for. Here you're being recognised. But what's your perspective on that? Because I think there's kind of very different viewpoints on what, especially now, what internship is. So do you feel like you were kind of respected for what you were doing? Did you feel like it was a fair exchange?
Yes and no.
Yeah, like, I feel like, yes, like, within the company, yes, it was very, like, validating to, like, have all your ideas put out, and, like, John would, like, look at them and, like, talk about them and be, like, really nice or whatever. But obviously, I think the reality of it is that you're working under a company, and so anytime they put out anything that's yours, it's not yours.
Mm-hmm.
It's theirs under their name. If it has their tag, it's theirs.
Yeah.
So, like, I think you just have to, like, come to terms with the fact that, like, you may be giving your soul, but, like, that's why it's sort of, like, selling your soul, you know, because it's sort of, like, that's just how it is.
Yeah.
But also, you get to be really proud of the fact that, like, you look at something in the store, and you're like, I did that. You know what I mean? Like, you get your own personal validation from that. I feel like that's my point of view.
Yeah.
I feel like, as young designers, you really have to understand your worth and the worth of your own ideas. Like, so for, I agree, like when you approach kind of something like that and you go to work for a company, you have to remember that what you're doing at the end of the day is not yours. It's always for like someone else. It's always under the direction of the creative director. And it's the same for you when you collaborate with people, you know, it's under your creative direction. So you have to understand the worth of, your own ideas. For me, like, I realized when I was there and I agree, it was really exciting for me to be able to collaborate and be involved with so many projects, but at a certain point I did kind of like hold back and keep like some stuff to myself because I mean, for me, I didn't see myself wanting to stay on there and work there. If I did, that would be a different story. Then 100%, you know, then I'd be investing myself because then, you know, eventually I would be expecting the proper pay and the proper, I don't know, hours and that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, we were interns, so I really wanted to give like my time, my effort, and my ideas for what kind of I was being paid for and what I would allow myself to give. So you kind of have to reconsider that and understand, you know, your value as a designer. Because I think also it's a bit scary, like when you go into, you know, a big brand, it just seems really exciting. You're like, wow, I'm doing this great thing and I'm being recognized and this is so exciting. But really, like, your ideas are worth a lot. They're worth a lot more. When I was there, I was like, oh, whoa, it's just great to be, you know,
in it. Yeah.
But actually, like, you know, there's a lot more value to your ideas than you expect.
So has it affected how you now work? And you, I suppose, you're working with more teams in your different work areas now. And now you're working at MA Collection, you're going to have a team, hopefully, helping you. And you too, Chip, your final collection, you're going to have a team working with you. Has it taught you how to work with a kind of larger team now?
Yeah, for sure. It's like it's kind of like I don't know, it's all about respect and how you respect other people as artists and creatives.
Yeah.
Because if you bring someone on into your team or on to like collaborate with you, you have to make sure that there's some kind of like common ground and that there is, you know, like some kind of equal exchange, that you're both getting something out of it. Like I really either like monetary or, you know, it's something that you both like creatively believe in.
Yeah.
So for me, it depends on like what project I'm working on. But definitely, I always consider those two when I approach a collaboration, whether someone wants to collaborate with me or I want to collaborate with someone else.
Yeah. Like when I was working with Paulina for her final collection, like at the end for her BA collection, like honestly, I feel like I got as much out of it as she did from me. Like, I was helping her, but obviously that knowledge that she had about techniques and like how to get, she has this really good eye for like getting things really crisp and professional looking. And so like, I learned that sort of like technique of like, how do you make something that is like crafty, make look like really professional, like and sell for digital, something like that, you know?
Yeah.
That's what I got out of that sort of collaboration.
Yeah.
And like, now like, when I have my own team, I sort of know what direction, like how to treat people. Like, obviously they're students. We're all students. So like, you can't expect 100% from them because they've got their own lives. So like, you have to give as much as you get.
Yeah,
you know?
Absolutely. Yeah. Okay, I'm gonna move to the next slide. You'll definitely be able to add these points in everywhere. So Paulina, to you, tell us about your creative journey so far. So you started on foundation.
Yes.
You realized they're knit, or you kind of figured that out beforehand? So sort of start from there and kind of tell us.
Okay, I did foundation. So I'm from Canada. When I finished high school, I was like, oh yeah, I want to do some creative stuff. You know, I want to be an artist. I want to be a painter or a sculptor or something like that. So I applied for foundation, and I got onto the fine art course, but I decided to do the diagnostic course because I thought, you know, maybe there's something else out there for me. And I'm really happy that I did, because when I did fine art, I really hated it. It just wasn't my tea. But when I did the fashion course, fashion textiles pathway for the kind of diagnostic time, I loved it. It was a lot more making, and I realized that I'm definitely like more maker focused than just just concept focused, or which what I found with like fine art. So it was really exciting for me to kind of like make and draw, and that's what I felt like you're really doing on the fashion textiles pathway, which was really fun. So I did that, and then when I was doing that, I mean, I didn't know how to knit. I didn't really know how to make clothes or anything. I had no skills. But, you know, with the kind of guidance of my tutors, they saw kind of a very textile-focused, fashion-focused kind of work in my portfolio, and Chris pushed me to apply for knitwear, which I did. And I'm really happy that I did, because once I got onto the BA, I really realized that it was for me, and that's like how I wanted to translate like my work and ideas. So I did the BA, which was fun. Again, like you don't have to enter the BA with so many skills. It's more about like your ideas and your approach and your vision and your voice as a designer. So I wouldn't be like too worried if, you know, you're not the best pattern cutter, or you're not the best, you know, if you want to apply for print, you don't know how to print or anything. It's not about that at all. It's about your voice and your perspective.
Yeah. And I'm trying to work out how much knit you actually left the foundation with.
Zero.
Yeah. So that's kind of a really, really worth thinking about. I think some people here probably still are a bit worried about, like, yeah, when do we do the technical classes? You know, it is never going to be a big focus on foundation. It's exactly what you said. It's about finding your voice as a designer and trusting your instincts, no matter what they might be. And, you know, very much for the work you produced in the image here, it's not traditional path for knit, you know, it, and maybe that's come through more experimental processes anyway. It's not through learning loads of traditional knit techniques.
Yeah, I mean, for me, when I was on foundation and on the BA, it was always like on a budget. So I would work loads with, you know, just found materials or things I got in charity shops or just like things I got from the pound shop. And I mean, and Chris really pushed me as well to kind of work in that direction. Because it's something that kind of worked for me. I really like responsive materials. So that was like what I found throughout my BA and just like experimenting. But, you know, I really never produced anything on my BA that I absolutely loved. It was very much, you know, an experimentation and kind of finding what I like and doing, you know, different things. And finally, when I got to my final collection, I feel like I had kind of built up this knowledge and built up, my perspective and what I like, and I use that to my advantage for my
I think that's so valuable to think about as well, because I think there's a lot of, I think we all do it as creatives. We put a lot of pressure on ourselves. If we're spending time on something, we want the output to be really successful. But actually, particularly here, and you're saying, you know, through your degree, you were doing this as well. The whole thing is experimental process. It's so that when you get to that final collection, you're ready to show up. You've got all the skills. You've experimented. You've diversified. You've tried all the different materials that are possible, yeah. The different techniques. And that, I mean, that's exactly what this is. You know, you shouldn't ever be putting the pressure on yourself here to be coming up with perfect output. You know, the project you're on right now, the Pairs project, some of you are loving, some of you are hating, I get that. But it's about experimentation, and hopefully that partner you're working with will challenge you to push you somewhere you weren't going to go, and maybe make you think in a different way, even if you absolutely hate them. It will push you somewhere you weren't expecting to go. And maybe you won't realise that yet. That's the other thing. So I think that's a really valuable point, actually. Yeah.
It's always exciting to make great work, but sometimes I think it's even more exciting to make bad work, because you kind of realise what you don't like and kind of can move on from there. So that's what that's why I really enjoyed my BA, and I didn't really think about what I wanted to do after I finished at all. It was all very like focused on, you know, what we're doing in school and the projects. I wasn't really thinking about, you know, oh, how does this translate like outside of uni. I don't know. But it was different. It was kind of different though. I think it would be stupid for me to not say that, you know, now things are a bit different. We have like Instagram, and you see a lot of like people around you who are like your age or even younger who are kind of like starting brands or like being really successful, but you really need to define what success is to you and how you want to like explore your own work and how you want to find yourself as a designer. And there's like, you have kind of all the time in the world, especially as doing like foundation. This is your time to kind of figure that out and experiment and fail a little bit.
I think it's interesting saying that as well, because I'm sure most of you are aware of Harris Reed's work. He's obviously Instagram star and beyond. And I know that, and I've just sort of heard this on the grapevine, it's like other people on the course with him kind of like, oh my God, I'm not doing anything, I'm not anywhere, I haven't got a brand, I haven't got anything.
Yeah.
That's not the point of the BA.
Yeah.
The point of the BA is for you to exactly take what you want from it and develop as a designer. Some people get lucky breaks, some people kind of hit the ground running, they know where they want to be, and I'd say Harris didn't have a clue what he really wanted after leaving foundation. Everything fell into place, and he worked hard for it, so there's not taking anything away from that, but it comes at different points. I think it's really easy to get swept up in this idea that you're supposed to be successful
instantly.
Yeah.
And it's really not what it's about at all.
And
if you apply that pressure on top of the degree,
Yeah.
So just you gotta like set your goals and like stick to them, and it's hard not to get sidetracked, but you really have to like stay strong in your goals. So yeah, did that. Did my final collection. This is a piece from like my pre-collection. I'm like trying to like get through this really really quickly so
that
I can
cool.
speak. When I was on my BA, we did a project for Salvation Army, and they donated loads of like old clothes, which we had to make into a collection. We had like 2 weeks to do it. It was very Project Runway, which was fun.
Yeah.
That was like when I kind of first thought about the idea for my final collection of, because there that like shoe like in the middle was there in the pile, and I remember saying to Flo, who I was collaborating with on the project, I was like, let's make like corsets out of shoes, and she's like, no. And I was like, okay, fine, I'll just do that for my final collection.
So you collaborated on that, the pre-collection pieces.
No, it was like a project before that, and we ended up making like, we made like sexy swimwear out of like hoodies and stuff.
Okay.
Really funny. But when I entered into my final year, I like had this kind of idea, and I really wanted to go for it, and I kind of used the skills that I had and like my make skills. I just knew that I had really strong make skills. I like know kind of like my strengths and weaknesses. I'm not so experimental with my textiles. I'm not like really like that dramatic with my shapes, but I am really strong in like my make skills and my use of color and like approach to like the woman's body. Like I'm really like focused on kind of accentuating that shape. So that's what I focused on for my BA. I don't even know.
So, yeah.
Finished BA,
graduated BA. some exciting projects happened.
Yeah, I did some exciting projects. This cover, this was like pure luck, honestly. So the stylist contacted me, and this was before my BA collection had even come out, and she had seen a picture of the sneaker corset that I posted for my pre-collection on Instagram, and she just asked to loan it, and she also asked me to make a pair of boots for this shoot that she was doing in Jamaica, but she wouldn't tell me who it was for, but I knew it was for Dazed. So I, like, me and my boyfriend that night, we like bought a pair of like cowboy boots and painted them, and then I kind of got that ready and we sent it off, and I didn't know anything or hear anything back. I didn't even know if it got shot. But in the middle, Chet was there in the middle of like making final collection. It was like 2 weeks before the show that they just kind of like posted that as the cover, and I had no clue, and they didn't tell me, and they emailed me like 1 second after, like, oh yeah, by the way, this is the cover. I'm like, oh my god, what the heck.
I remember like we literally climbed under a table and was like, oh, so
cool. Chet loves to scream, so yeah. I told him, I was like, come here, I was like, don't scream. And he like bent down and looked at the picture, I was like, oh my god. So that was really exciting, and then it kind of like gained a bit of like interest towards my work, I guess from like the outside media, I don't know. And then I finished my final collection, and it came out, and it went really well, and I won the L'Oreal Prize, which was, like, so exciting for me. I really didn't expect that at all. Like, my collection was really, like, personal, and it was really just, like, based on what I wanted to do. I had no, like, intention for it to like, happen like this, so I feel really grateful and feel really lucky, but I also worked really hard for it to happen. And then after that, I started getting, like, contacted by loads of different companies, studio collaborations. One of my first collaborations I did after the BA was with Vans. I did like a project with House of Vans, and they gave me loads of Vans to make shoe corsets out of, and I had kind of like a month to kind of experiment and have fun with that, and that was cool. And then I got approached by like loads of different people, but again, I really wanted to, you know, consider, you know, what my time was,
yeah,
what like I was willing to give, and also what I was gonna get. So I said no to like loads of things, which is really important. You also have to know the strength
make
in saying
right
no.
Choices,
it's
yeah.
really hard to say no because you think, oh, this is amazing. But if it's not something that works for you, don't do
yeah.
it. And if it seems like, you know, it's gonna put your life into chaos, I'm always like, I want to live like a really good, happy, chill life. Even though like it's not, and all the
focus.
Stress, it's
yeah.
It's aspirational to you know, keep it pretty. And then earlier this year, or I guess it was like the beginning or in November last year, I got contacted by Adidas through the British Fashion Council, and they really wanted to like work on this project with me on a show during Paris Fashion Week. I just said yes because I really wanted to work with a sportswear brand. I didn't like collaborate with any sportswear brand on my BA because that was really the point. Like all of the shoes that I was working with were donated to me by either like people in school or from people in my town back home. So this was like a really cool opportunity to actually work one on one with a sportswear mm-hmm. brand, and you know, like I guess show my work in kind of that light. So I made some like new pieces. They wanted me to design a shoe, and I had like 3 days to do it, 3 days to like design and make a shoe, and we went to Paris and we just did it, and it was really stressful but really exciting, and then we put the show on, and it was super fun, and I don't know.
And then so that, yeah, it was a year ago.
That was like, the, yeah, beginning of the year, so yeah, a year ago.
And you just finished your collection for Scents.
Yeah. It's for
Essence. Sorry.
So last summer I did a capsule collection for Selfridges after my BA. They contacted me and they really wanted me to do kind of like more wearable, like takedown version. And that was a really exciting project for me. I was like, oh, I really like that challenge. I would like to try that.
Yeah.
And I actually really enjoyed it. I never thought that doing kind of more commercial work would excite me because I am such like a maker and I love to do experimental things. But actually doing something really commercial was really exciting. Because just the idea of like people wearing my clothes was
yeah.
was great. I was like, oh, I want
and
to wear this.
These are still your product, your designs,
yeah.
but now for selling market.
Yeah, exactly. So it was a different kind of challenge, and I really wanted to take it. And that went really well. And then from there, I got contacted by Essence, and they wanted to do a capsule collection with me. So that's a project I worked on this summer. And again, it was like another kind of takedown from my show that I did in Paris. With Adidas, and just making, you know, like a small collection of clothes that were a bit like more wearable or easier for me to take apart. Yeah, so that was really fun. And again, that's just another challenge. And I feel like every time I do it, I get better at it. Like production and designing for a market. It's not something you learn in school, but I'm really like grateful that I have the chance to kind of work on a project like that because it gives you a different perspective as a designer.
I think it's interesting you were saying to me before we started that you made that choice as well. One, it's a great opportunity, but it also helped you fund for the MA. So you're kind of making choices that fit around what your plan is.
Yeah, exactly. You know, you've got to make the money work for you.
Yeah.
So I was entering into my final year of MA, and I'm not like a super rich person. So I knew that I needed I knew kind of what amount it takes to kind of make a collection now. So I kind of budgeted that, and then I used the money that I made from my sister to like pay for my collection. You know, the money's running out fast though.
Yeah. Amazing. Cool. Let's move on. So, Chet, tell us about your creative journey so far.
Okay. So I was in foundation as well, in the fashion department. I'm from New York, and then I randomly heard from a friend of a friend that CSM exists, and I was like, let's go. It's cheaper and better, okay. And so then I got into the fashion foundation, and then I was like really, I remember like right when they were like splitting fashion into and textiles, I was like, oh my God, like which one am I gonna choose? Like I love textiles, but I love fashion. And I was like, fuck, like I need to figure this out. And then one of my tutors was like, yeah, like they're gonna fight for you, but you need to figure out which one you want. Like, are you fashion? And I was like, yes. And they're like, maybe you should go into knit because like that combines fashion and textiles. Like that's the best of both worlds, really. It's the hardest of both worlds, but it's the best of both worlds. And then I was applying for BA and I got in. And like around that time, I got all of these, obviously like I'm really, really good friends with Harris. So, like he garnered all this attention and like, he sort of like spread that attention throughout his friends. So I got a lot of attention on like Dazed and on like different like magazines and stuff. And then like, I was sort of like selling myself a lot. I was just, like giving clothes away, shipping it like with my own money and then getting it back in horrible condition. And like, I wasn't really like you said, I was not respecting myself. And like, eventually it came to a price where I was like, right, like I can either focus all my time on doing like random bits and bobs from magazines or like figure out who I am as a person and like actually dedicate all my time to making mistakes and like not making perfect stuff. And so that's why I ended up doing it. I started saying no to like all these random magazines, which was really, really good. It makes you feel really, really good when you can say no, like you're super empowered and everything. And then yeah, so when I went into knit BA, I did not actually know how to do any knitting as well. I knew how to like finger knit, and that was it. And then started learning the domestic, got really good at it. And then I started learning the industrial, and I figured out like, you just figure out like Paulina said, like throughout your BA, you just learn more and more about what you love and what you hate. I went through lots of phases of who I am as a person. Like all my, I remember first year was all like romantic and like Victorian, because that was like the thing of the time. And then second year I went through like Sporty Spice and like Spacey Spice. Like, so every project I learned a bit more about like who am I and what do I hate. And then now I'm using that knowledge for my final collection, and I'm really excited about it now because I'm like, yo, like I was this person the entire time and I just figured it out now. You know what I mean? And so yeah, so now I was working on that, and like when I was at Marsala in Paris, I made loads of like friends with like fine artists and like make jewelry designers and shoe designers and like music people as well. So like I'm like collaborating with a lot of them for my final collection to like produce the music for it, which is really important, and then producing like the shoes and producing the jewelry and like getting the makeup done. So like, and even getting a couple models from there as well, like. It's really, really exciting.
How's that collaboration working? So they're producing for your collection, but are you doing what they take in kind of your return?
So what they, like, for them, is an experiment.
Okay.
They were like, oh yeah, like, because one of my jewelry designers was talking about, like, creating this, like, magnetic orb in jewelry that is like spinning whilst you're wearing it, which I was like, oh my god, like do it. Like, and he was like, yeah, like I'll experiment it for you, figure out the kinks for myself so I can sell it for myself. And I'm like, yes, I'd love to, and I could do debut it for you. So like they're getting something as well out of it. Like I think it's for them, it's more of like an experiment to see what they can do and what they can't do. And for me, it's my entire life. So. But the collaboration is going really, really well. Like you, when you start collaborating with other people, like that aren't in fashion, you realize how professional you have to be.
Yeah.
Like I've started, I have to like send them like PDF packages of like dumbing down my collection so they understand it really quickly in a couple pages, and also all that stuff. And like also like when you're like I'm in the process of applying for sponsorships, like that's the same process. Like you have to really dumb yourself down and make sure you can communicate what you want in 5 pages or like 10 pages or something, so they don't lose focus. So it's all very like you learn how succinct you have to be. And that's like collaborating, like even in second year we had a the sustainability project, which was fun but was triggering. And then we also had this, like, Swarovski sponsored with, like, Fox, like, The Greatest Showman sponsored as well, that big project. And, like, it was, like, 2 people from print, 2 people from knit, 2 people from FCP, lots of people, lots of different opinions. And you learn to, like, you learn to, like, fight with people, you know, how to fight with people so that it's productive, not just, like, getting mad at each other. And you learn how to, like, when you're bouncing ideas off of someone, like how your idea might develop into something else, but that might be better than what you originally had. Like I have learned so many different things from other people and like different techniques that I wouldn't even think of trying, and now I want to incorporate for myself. Not stealing their idea, but it's something that you build together that you're like, we can both learn.
Did you find that hard, that kind of letting go of your own ideas? Because I certainly had it as a service. It's like, I know I'm amazing, so I want this to be the idea.
Yeah.
But you have to, it has to combine with something else. It has to grow, it has to evolve. And I think it takes a while to get your head around that.
Yeah.
Is that a hard process for you?
It's like, it's hard, but you learn that like, whoever is the loudest in the conversation tends to be the one who's controlling the conversation. So you have to learn, if someone's being louder than you and you love your idea, join them and then bounce the idea. You know what I mean? Like, don't just let someone take over your idea, but also don't take over someone else's idea. Mm. You know, like, you have to learn that there's respect to both of you.
Yeah.
Work. Like, you both are important designers and can change the future. So,
yeah.
Like, you know, respect is the biggest key.
And it's a hard battle, I think.
Yeah.
It's like, someone might never stop talking. It's like, you just wait for the gap.
Yeah.
And when there's a gap, say your idea. And it is hard. It is hard because, hello, fashion textiles, everyone loves their own voice being heard mostly. So you work it out, I think, and you get better at it. It takes time, but
you
this
have
is
to
why we're starting it now.
Yeah. Eventually you just have to interrupt someone and be like, that's a really good point, but I'm better. No. You interrupt and be like, that's a really good point, but like I think we can add on to it like by doing this and this and this, like, and then like towards the end for that project we made like some beautiful stuff. Like we had like massive inflatable balloons and like that were garments, and then also like skirts that turned into trousers that turned into tops, like all that kind of crazy stuff that I just would not have been able to get to with it. No, we're not with the help of like my teammates. So that's what you get out of it. Yeah. And then for that sustainability project, I was teamed up with a really great friend of mine, and he was like talking to me about leather molding, which I was like, what is that? And like he's taught me this new technique that I love. I'm wearing one of the pieces now. I'm like, it's like really cool because the leather like falls back into its own shit. You know, like little things like that that you pick up and you're like, in the future now, you're like, whoa, if I want to make a shoe, I can wet mold it with leather. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And like apply it to all different things.
Yeah, absolutely.
So it's
amazing.
Really, really useful.
So, okay. Collaboration, the main topic of today. So just to kind of break down what collaboration is, in case anyone's unsure, the action of working with someone to produce or create something. So discussions around collaboration are often abstract, despite it being generally acknowledged that good collaboration can promote strong creativity and innovative thinking. Problems that are solved and ideas flourish when talented teams combine forces. After all, together we know more. And that's from Creative Review. And I think really kind of sound statement makes a lot of sense, I think. And it doesn't necessarily make sense at this stage, but the more you move into industry, the closer you get sort of up the chain of your education towards industry, it's so sound. You know, you've never ever produced anything on your own. So for you two, why is collaboration important in fashion textiles?
Again, what you said, you will never do anything by yourself. Even if you're doing something just for yourself, you always have to work with other people. You always have to find compromises. It's just that's how it is. If you're working in a brand, you're working with other people. If you work by yourself, you can't do anything by yourself. So for example, for this Essence capsule I did, I worked with a factory to produce the clothes, because it's quite a lot of clothes. I can't make them all by myself. So I designed the collection, I made the samples, I worked with my intern, and we worked on all the patterns together. And it's really about having like really good communication skills to be able to kind of delegate your vision and work with someone who doesn't necessarily have your hands but are able to then produce something that looks like it's made from you. So that's a skill. It's a really hard skill to have, and it can be really difficult, but I think it's like really important. Communication is so key, and I learned that so much from just making really horrible mistakes. So right now I'm doing a collaboration with Adidas for two collections that will come out next year. So that was a very different scope of a project for me, because usually like when I make clothes, I'm making it for myself, but this was a different process. I had to like draw them and then communicate, and you have to be very detailed about everything that you want, and then it comes back from the factory and it's completely wrong, and it's really stressful. But you have to be able to have like really strong communication skills to be able to then pinpoint how
the problem solves. It's terrifying.
It's terrifying.
When you send off that pack,
and
so in industry this is a tech pack, right? Mm. So the knitwear needs to
get out of stock
because it's from scratch.
Yeah.
But I remember doing the same thing, and it's like you send it off and your vision is so clear in your head, but have you got it out of your mouth and put it on paper and drawn it correctly, and you're like, oh, they'll get it, they'll figure it out. They won't.
Yeah.
And no one ever will.
Yeah.
Like, you have to get, and it's a talent, you hone it, I think.
Yeah.
But as long as you want your garment or your fabric or your sculpture or whatever it is, as long as you want it out in the world, you have to communicate.
Yeah.
It's the only way. Whether that communication is written word, vocabulary, drawing, physical, whatever it is, you have to communicate. And sometimes the best way is to make it, make a mini version, and then that be the thing you send.
Mm-hmm.
But somehow it has to be spelt out,
everything. Like for knitwear, it's like from like the yarn count to exactly how the stitches are to the gauge to the tension. You're trying to explain it to a baby.
Yeah,
you
that's
to.
The best assumption.
Yeah,
I think, and do this in your pairs as well. Assume each other don't know anything. So when you're trying to say, you know what I mean, it's like this, and it's like nobody knows what it means, what you mean, and that's what we're trying to get you to do within your sketchbook development work. It's like that you're always telling a story in your development work, but it's kind of the same when you're producing garments. It's just a very technical story, but it's how you kind of bring this thing to life. And I think, I do it too, and I think we all, we're all at different stages of that process, but you get so much better at that communication.
Yeah.
So much better.
Yeah.
And you realize that no one technically knows anything, or rather, everyone has their own opinion.
Yeah.
That's more the point.
It's also really hard not to panic when things go horribly wrong. Especially in a collaborative project, because I feel like when you're working on a project by yourself, you're like, oh yeah, I can fix this. Like, oh, I know what I'm doing, because it's all coming from you.
Yeah.
But in a kind of setting where you're working, especially with multiple people, it's really hard not to like want to freak out and get really scary that like everything's going really downhill. But then you should also remember that the strength of working with loads of people is that you have all of these hands, and you have all of these minds, and you can work together and like problem solve and make it work. Which you don't have when you're by yourself. You produce a lot slower when you work by yourself as well.
So much so.
Yeah.
I think problem solving is a really key one, I think, and it's fast problem solving. It has to happen a lot. I remember being in fittings working for a brand, and your piece turns up, you've never seen it before, you sent off the tech pack, it turns out really fucking ugly or wrong, and you're now there with your creative director and you have to make it good, because they're looking at you like, what did you do? And you need to respond to what's right in front of you. And that might mean cutting it in half, turning it upside down, who knows, or just saying, no, this doesn't work, yeah, we need to move forward. But that kind of problem solving is, it happens at every stage, right? I mean, you will develop loads of samples at whatever point, or kind of paper manipulations, whatever, and they just don't turn out how you want, and the next day you've got a crit, or whatever it is. You need to be able to resolve it somehow, whether it means redesigning it, or playing with it in another way. You've got to be prepared to be open, I think, to any possibility, because that is what's going to happen when it's presented to you.
And also, it's important to remember that, you know, everyone has a different process. I feel like they always say this on foundation, but it's actually very true. So you all have very individual processes, and when you start to work with another person, I feel like a lot of the times when things go wrong, or like when fights kind of break out, it's because you can't really understand what the other person is communicating, what their process is, or how they go about, like, you know, what they're doing. I think it's, you know, what's like a really great exercise, kind of sit with your partner and like write down like both your strengths and your weaknesses.
Yeah.
And you know, you have to be smart about it, how you're gonna use like your strengths to your advantage.
Yeah.
And that's a good link actually. After this, we're doing an activity which explores exactly that you're gonna be doing with your partner. So when we finish this, it's kind of a way of assessing each other and yourself, but we'll talk about that a bit further on. Okay. So maybe we kind of answered this. How has your work evolved through collaboration? And this is an example of your work, Alina.
Yeah.
So is there anything you want to add? We have covered a lot of these points, but maybe you know, like you said, you're working with factories now, you're working with people, and probably both of you to a degree, you will be, I'm assuming, your final collection as well.
Yeah.
You can't physically make every tiny element, it's just impossible.
Yeah.
So how has your work evolved through collaboration? You said you have to make changes to make it work sometimes. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not always your absolute vision. Mm-hmm. Maybe your vision is just completely impossible anyway.
Mm-hmm.
It might defy the laws of human nature. So
yeah.
They're the kind of things you learn.
A lot of times when you collaborate with someone who is so different from you, mm-hmm, and like thinks completely opposite to you, you learn how to think in their way, and they learn how to think in your way. So you get so many skills with that, that like you can apply to any different part of your practice. Like, I was once working with this guy who's like so like, he likes to like drape really like on like 1950s style, like on the board and all that stuff. And I was like, bleh, that's boring. And then like, I tried it for the first time and I was like, whoa, like this is actually how like you pattern cut. You know what I mean? Like, I was like, well, this is actually how you work on the body, and then you can get really cool. And I like, it's like involved with part of my process now. So like you get a lot out of a collaboration that you, I think in the beginning you're like, I hate you, and then you realize, I love you.
Yeah. Like, do you want to add anything to that, or is that?
I don't know. I'm sure you guys will have questions. So
yeah.
We'll come back. So what are the pros and cons in collaboration? So I think we're talking a lot about the pros.
Mm-hmm.
I think some of you will be sat there thinking, but you're not in this collaboration right now, and this is how. So, you know, like you said, you do get to the point where you're like, sometimes you just hate that person, you can't see the benefits of it. And why do you want your process challenged? Your process is perfectly fine before the person came along. You know, the reality is you have no choice but to collaborate in your future. You've got no choice whatsoever. So maybe we can discuss some of the cons that you've experienced, like the pros and cons. The image here is Versace of H&M. That's kind of my personal perspective. I'm, you know, that high street collaboration for me isn't always the most successful way of going. But let's talk about your personal kind of pros and cons in collaboration, and then we can talk more industry.
Okay, I can talk about it in like two ways. So from my perspective of doing collaborative projects with other students on the BA, so for example, the sustainability project that I did on the BA, we both did.
Yeah.
In the knitwear BA, so you work with three print students, and there's three knit students on my team, on the team that we're working in. And the hardest part for us was to narrow down our idea. like, I guess the hardest part for me too is like, I feel like I always want to be in control, and it was really hard for me to let go. And then it's also hard when you have like people on your team who are kind of like looking to you to kind of take control of the situation, but it's like, how do you find the most democratic? Because I think especially for student collaborations, and especially it is for school, you know, it's hard not to be selfish. Like you know, you want this for your portfolio, or you want this to be like the, you know, really good for you, but you have to remember that, you know, there are other students who are in the kind of same boat as you on your team.
So how, did you ever act on that selfish desire, which we all have, to just make it successful for you? So how did you kind of deal with that?
It's
a hard one.
It was really, really hard because of, like, I didn't necessarily share the taste of my other, the other members in my group, but that was really exciting because the work that we ended up producing was something that I would never, like, produce for myself, but it was actually something I really liked, and it brought, like, a different vibe. I never use a lot of, like, I like to be really colorful, but actually the collection that I ended up making was, the majority of it was this like black, kind of like shiny, like kind of a bit sleek collection. It was still colorful, but it was something that I would never have done, and it brought this kind of new perspective to my own work. But there was a lot of fights. Like, there was a lot of fights to kind of get there, and there was a lot of like stress, and there was actually a lot of crying, but it was only because of like a lack of communication with each other. And once we kind of got over that hump, and we saw each other like, and you know, in a more equal light, and used everyone for like their skills, it became a very like exciting and fun process, and actually being in the making was so fun. It was one of the funnest projects I had ever worked on.
So that's good to hear as well, that kind of initial hump. And I think it's probably every stage that you collaborate in your early stages, it always starts pretty hard because you don't know the rules, you don't know how to navigate things, and it's always about working out that navigation somehow. Mm-hmm. But you have to go through the fight, you have to try, you know, you cry and you're going to get upset and it is going to be difficult and you're not going to get exactly your vision. Mm-hmm. But, and there's always a but, and that's where you get the confidence that they always evolve into a pro, because it's a situation you're in.
Yeah.
You can't change it. You've got to be in that collaboration. There's no way out.
You adapt.
You have to adapt. Yeah, and that's what makes you a stronger designer, essentially.
Yeah.
What project are they collaborating?
So they have a project now called Pairs.
And they talk about their own history?
It's not quite the same as the previous one.
Okay.
It's so they started off at an exhibition together, and they had to kind of respond to the exhibition, and now they're kind of find common links in what they responded to, and they're developing ideas from that. It's very open-ended what that turns into.
Yeah.
It's just a one-week project. There's no specific outcome they have to produce.
Uh-huh.
It can be anything.
Yeah.
So, it's harder therefore, but
more
fun as well.
Because I remember when we were in Foundation, there was that like
culture swap. Yeah.
That was like really difficult. And that was like a very short collaboration because really you just handed off your research to someone else and you just have to work from their point of view. And it was very stressful because my partner was Japanese, really sweet, really cute girl, but she did not speak that much English. So when she was telling me the story of her life, I was like, what are you talking about? You know? And also, like, I was like, I'm like a very colorful person and her story was so dark, like so dark. And I was like, I don't even know if I can do this project, but my tutors were like, you can do it in like a class way, and I was like, sure. And then like that was some of my best work. It was like super dark, but like mixing like all these like really dark elements, but like making it playful and light, and like that was some of my best work. Honestly, I was really, really proud of it, and I use it in my portfolio. And like, I think that's like one of the massive pros of a collaboration. But obviously, the cons are sometimes you just don't even know how to begin communicating. You need to figure it out. If it's not through English and language, then through visuals.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it just kind of reminds me that, and again, menswear is kind of my area, and one of the reasons I love menswear is the confines, you know. There are traditions and there are limitations in terms of what men will accept and what men will wear when you're thinking commercially. I love those rules and those parameters because it means, okay, they're my boundaries. How am I going to play with those boundaries, and how am I going to turn it into something that I want to put out there? And you guys have the same in terms of producing a fabric, as a knitted fabric, and it's, you can turn it on its head, you can reinvent it, but you want to kind of keep a context somehow, right? Because you can completely reinvent the process and everyone's like, eh, I don't get it. You know, there's always a parameter you have to work with. So for you, Chet, you were given specific research that made no sense to you necessarily. That's what you've got. You've got no choice and you have to make good of it. And it will happen at every single stage. If you work for a fashion brand, you will hit the same thing. They've decided this season, that's what we're doing. These are the research images, blah, blah. You have to interpret that. You don't have a choice. You have to make good of it, you know? So I think it's interesting that those parameters are quite hard, but it's a good challenge.
Yeah, it's really interesting. Like, you can really feel yourself. Like, when you first see, it's always like you first see the initial research and you're just like, what the heck? Like, I don't understand any of this. And then, like, it's almost like a computer. You can feel yourself, like, turning, and then you're like, wait, actually, there's, like, bits and bobs that are really interesting, and then I can, like, turn this into something interesting, and then you develop from that.
Yeah.
But, like, and I completely understand when you first see or when you're first talking to someone about something, you're like,
yeah. And these guys are halfway through that, so, because it's just a one-week thing, so you might still be at that roadblock where you're like, ah. You still need to find the angle, whatever it is.
Yeah.
And I think, like, the way to continually move forward is just keep generating whatever it is, just keep drawing or keep manipulating paper or material or whatever it is. It's like keep generating something and then eventually it clicks.
Yeah.
You both agree with
that? Yeah, that goes for everything. Like, you know, I think also when you hit roadblock, the first reaction that you want to do is kind of like stop. You don't want to keep working. You have to work through your problems.
Yeah.
You need to work. It's all about problem solving.
Yeah.
So I think it's always important to just like work and do. Is like the most important thing. Don't stop doing.
Yeah.
And you're allowed to go away and cry and then come back and carry on doing.
Yeah.
But you have to keep doing.
Mm-hmm. Even if it's not going well, just keep doing, because
something
will like eventually come out of it. Especially at the stage that you guys are at, it's important to always explore and do.
Just keep generating something.
Yeah.
So there's a common misconception that working collaboratively weakens your independent design aesthetic. What is your perspective? And I'm using the Taylor Swift and collaboration as an example. You know, so you can kind of talk from that personally, or you can talk about it from kind of your perspective on other design designers or whatever you want.
For me, I think it's made me a stronger designer to be able to like work collaboratively, like communicate my vision, but in something that's not necessarily my approach. So, for example, the stuff that I'm doing with Adidas is extremely commercial. It is so commercial. And the stuff that they think about is stuff that I never think about ever when I make clothes.
Mm.
It's like, oh, what's the, you know, durability of this over time? And like these, you know, the fastenings, like how is this going to like stand up in the washing machine and that kind of stuff.
Stuff you want to say I don't care to.
Yeah, so you know, then a lot of your design work gets kind of like watered down a bit, but then it's, you know, how do you find the balance of still having, you know, when someone sees it, they instantly know that, you know, it's my work, but at the same time it works in the context of the brand.
Yeah.
So that kind of like problem solving has made, I feel like smarter. I feel like a smarter designer, because it's a different problem that I never had approached before.
Because
when you're just, you know, a student, you can do whatever you want and like, you know, which is great.
Mm.
You experiment, you do loads, but actually putting it into a context is even harder.
Yeah.
And
I think it also highlights that point we kind of kept coming back to, is this is the time to play and experiment and not be bogged down by what is perfect.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if you stay focused on just the thing you're doing, it's generally successful.
Mm-hmm.
You know, rather than thinking, what's the end goal? What's my career going to be? What's the blah? You know, you don't, beyond your education, getting into industry, you're dealing with this kind of conversation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what's the durability? What's the fastening? What's it, you know, and it's like, I want it to be using this fastening method, and they're like, we don't have any of those.
Yeah.
You have to rethink. You've got no choice. Or it's like, I want to produce blah, blah, blah. It's like, that doesn't fit the brand.
Yeah.
Straight, you have to flip everything constantly. And I think the problem solving point is one that keeps coming up as well. That's what a designer is. You are a constant problem solver, and you have a good aesthetic, so you are applying your positive aesthetic to a problem.
Mm-hmm.
And constantly, you know, reinventing that thing to be more successful.
Yeah.
I mean, also, I like, remember you guys are like in foundation. This is really the beginning. So if you fuck up now on this little 1 week project, it really is not gonna like change your entire life. Also, like situations like with Harris, like when he blew up after one project, like the White project, like that is very rare, and that is like, you know, like Harris admits it to himself. He was like, it also is a very big part of his personality and the people.
Absolutely.
Like, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
For him, that's his package. But like for someone like me, like I used to compare myself a lot to him, and I'm like, no, I'm a slow burner. You know what I mean? Like I know, like right now is not my time, but like my time will come. Like everyone
yeah.
has their time, so like you really don't have to stress about things now.
Yeah.
This is your time to really be in your cocoon, fuck up, make all the mistakes you possibly can now, and then later on you'll blossom and bloom.
Yeah.
You know?
Find out what you like. Oh my god, you might not even want to do fashion, you know.
Yeah.
But you might like finish this and you might figure out you want to do something completely different, and that's
yeah.
so okay.
Yeah.
I feel like especially in the bubble of this school,
mm-hmm.
it really feels like, oh, I need to be a successful like fashion designer with my own brand.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And like it has to be on every celebrity and
yeah,
blah, blah,
yeah.
blah 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 blah. But you really need to find, you know, that is like such a specific thing, and it's what you see. But there are so many jobs, and there's so many ways that you can express yourself creatively and like
mm-hmm.
find what you love, and it doesn't necessarily have to be that thing.
Are you talking about your fit model? She's
yeah.
one of my ex-students.
Yeah.
So yeah, do you want to tell
so
them?
She's also Canadian. She came from this school thinking like, oh, I definitely want to be a fashion designer, and she kind of did the foundation, and she ended up doing a BA in lingerie. And now that she's there, she's like, you know what? Actually, like, I don't even want to make clothes. I want to be on like the more communication side of it. I
yeah.
want to be, and that's also such a broad scope. There's so many things like in that area. My boyfriend, for example, he studied graphic design on his BA. He did like typography and I don't know, like posters and that kind of stuff. And he finished, and he was like, he finished with that degree, and he's like, you know what? I don't even want to do this as a career. This isn't what I want.
Yeah.
It's never too late to like stop and think about,
absolutely.
You know, how you want to like find
yeah.
a career. So he has that degree, and that's like his set of skills. But now he's a film director. he just kind of switched into.
And
that.
I bet those skills feed into what he does now. I think none of your time is wasted necessarily.
Yeah.
It's just it steers different directions, and it's like I now don't produce fashion. I don't have a label anymore, I don't work in the industry, but I'm constantly making. And I generally, and it's set and prop design, generally, I usually always employ people that have fashion education, because you're just so well-rounded, you know? You have to problem solve on so many levels. You have to think about so many elements, like a garment is such a complex thing, and everything that leads up to it, you know? Even getting to that stage, it's a mindset, I think, that. And it's very broad, so you can apply it to all these different areas. It's
yeah.
definitely a possible thing.
Like my friend right now on final year, he's like doing, he's in menswear, and he wants to like, he like was doing fashion and he loved fashion, and literally this year he was like, maybe I want to be a florist, like for fashion companies. And I was like, yeah, because he loves the vibe, he loves creating an environment, he loves garnering attention. Like, why not be a florist? Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
it kind of just makes sense. And I'm like, be a florist.
Yeah.
You can do anything.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Like.
So the most successful fashion brands have collaborated with artists and designers alike. What is to be gained for the bigger brands? So this is an image from John Booth. So he was a tutor here. Taught you. I collaborated, worked with John, and we both taught your group.
Yeah.
Was John here
John's
for you as well? I think
yeah.
that's his last year.
Yeah.
Yeah. So some of you are probably aware of his work as an illustrator and more. Again, he kind of works very kind of cross different areas. So what is to be gained from the bigger brands collaborating with kind of, so this is kind of, you are doing it right now.
Yeah.
So you're new on the scene. Editors want to work with you, they kind of want to, they're garnering attention from you, and that kind of works both ways, right? So, you can kind of take either perspective. So what's to be gained from the bigger brand or the smaller brand?
I think for them, like, so in a brand, they always have a kind of process, and there's a similar thing they kind of do every season. And you know what? It's like really boring for them sometimes. once you start working in brands, if you ever intern for a brand, you kind of realize that the process is kind of the same every season. So I think when the point of them bringing these like collaborators in is it's just more fun and it's more exciting and it's something like creative that the designers can kind of do and work on, which they wouldn't necessarily get to do in their own, you know, like practice as the designers for the brand. Like for example, Adidas, you know, all they're doing is like the same like tracksuits and tech packs like every year, and they design like 2 years ahead, so right now they're designing for like 2022. So it's a totally different process, and it's about like colorways, and it's just, you know, it's not always like necessarily like the most exciting thing, but then they'll have like ideas that they want to push, and they can push those ideas or those like perspectives through, you know, like a younger voice. What's really interesting about John, so he studied fashion and he did fashion print, but he was always very like interested in illustration, and he obviously has a very like distinct style, and when he finished he just didn't want to do fashion at all. Yet what keeps happening is he keeps collaborating with fashion brands, because his work just works so well in the context of fashion. So for them, they get this like exciting like different perspective, and it's something that's a bit more fun and a bit more visceral that they might not necessarily approach in their own work. And what's really great is that they're actually paying these artists and they're paying these like collaborators to kind of do their work for like their work within their brand. And I mean, that's really exciting.
And it's a very kind of fashionable process now, isn't it? You know, it's like you're always seeing the kind of Times collaboration, like H&M famously have been doing it for a really long time now, but the bigger brands are doing it, every brand is doing it, you know. And they obviously it's about money at the end of the day, you know, you both help each other out, you know, the bigger brand gets to say that they're really young, cool, and the smaller designer gets to kind of get their name out there on a wider scale, so there's shared kind of enterprise in there.
Like, if you look at the Dior X Hajime Soriyama, remember those like massive sculptures that were like, oh, that silver woman, like, and these like men walking around, it was like really, really beautiful, and like both of them have gotten so much attention from it. Like, Dior has now got like a reboot of being like Japanese and cool and metallic and everything, so they've got a lot more products to sell and like a lot of more prints to play with now under Hajime's name, and now Hajime has like all this attention for him as well, and he gets to sell more prints, so it's like a win-win situation when you collaborate with a big and like a small artist or something like that.
Cool. So what brands do you aspire to and which ones do you want to collaborate with? And this is an image from Craig Green and Montclair. So,
oh my god, I really want to collaborate with Montclair.
That's
one of my dream collaborations. And I feel like the direction that my MA collection is going in is really like communicating that I really want to collaborate with them. And you know, I think it also seems impossible to start working with it. You know, it seems like such a far away thing, but actually, like, you know, the worst thing you could hear is like the worst option is like no, like they don't want to do it or it's not time. So I think it's always important to like, you know, just reach out. You never know what can like happen from.
Have you done that yourself with any brands?
Well, I am going to reach out to Montclair and invite them to the show, and hopefully they can see some potential there.
But I think it's a good point, because I think the bigger the brand, we just think it's just going to go to assistant somewhere, and it's never going to kind of reach the right people. But it happens a lot. My partner works at the V&A. No one ever contacts him, even though he's at the V&A, because they just think, nah, it'll never happen. The few people that do get in there, and they end up working as part of the company, and it's surprising, you know, how direct kind of people are involved in these things as well. Obviously, if you're a smaller brand, and I was running my label, the email comes straight to me, so I'm going to be responding directly.
Yeah.
The bigger brands, it does actually happen that a very similar way as well. There are more people, but you know, it doesn't hurt getting in contact at any stage, I would say. And it's, we're talking big fashion brands, but maybe it's a fabric supplier, maybe it's a shoe designer, maybe it's someone studying on a different course, like in fashion communication, to collaborate with you to do your final project for here or something for your portfolio. You know, it just kind of makes sense.
Yeah, at the end of the day, it's just people. It's just people, so.
Yeah, we do forget that, I think.
Yeah, I always think, I used to think that to me, you look at like a label and you just think of it as this like massive, you know, thing that is so unreachable.
Like actually,
at the end of the day, it's the person who's on the other end of the email, responding back to you.
Yeah.
like honestly, like you don't realize how, like Paulina said, you don't realize how close you are to like actually working in the industry. Like literally,
especially being in London.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like second year, I was like, after this, I have to do placement year, and I was like, God, like I'm never gonna get into a big brand or like anything like that. And then like next thing I know, I'm working at Marcella. And then after that, I've flown to New York to work at Frozen Schooler. Like, and like my friends were like, holy crap, I'm at Givenchy, or like I'm at Chanel. Like, and then all your friends are at these massive companies, and you're just like, you can literally just get in there by just sending an email. You know what I mean? Or like literally just talking to someone, and they'll be like, oh yeah, I'm working for this. Like, it is like the stupidest, smallest thing that can get you somewhere massive.
Yeah.
So you just need to like try.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, just try.
Okay, over to you guys. So any questions for Nancy? Yeah, go for it.
What would you say your idea of success is like right now?
For me, I really think about that a lot. And for me, it's just like, one, be like happy. I guess that sounds like so simple, but it's just like, it's hard to find like a balance between your work and your life. And I think it's so important to, you know, live a really good life and like, you know, do things, see things, see your friends, like see your family. I think it's really hard to not get caught up with all of this like work and this whole like idea of like being in this industry. And that you see it a lot, people kind of get sucked in and then this becomes like their life and they have nothing else. Well, I really want like, you know, I want like a rich like perspective. And
how do you maintain that then? So firstly, you said you've turned down loads of potential offers for covering your work. So making the right choices for you as well, but what are the other ways you implement that?
Like I always say this, but I always feel like I need to put myself first. So even if I have like a deadline coming up and I'm feeling like really sick or I'm feeling really stressed, I take myself out of the situation because there's no point in me like working and being like so stressed and not like having like the best head on my shoulders. Like I'll leave, like I'll go to a gallery or I'll like, go home. I'll like take a nap. I love taking naps. It's important for like me to be in the best headspace because I'm the one who's making the work and it's for me at the end of the day. And if I'm not enjoying it, if I'm not having fun, like what's the point of me doing it? If I'm like really like hating my life, what's the point of me being in this like industry? I want to make sure that I'm like happy and having fun for like as long as possible because I really, you know, that's something I learned too when I was like interning and you just see like your bosses and they just hate their life.
Yeah.
And you're like, why? Then why are you doing this? Like why would you? And people do because they want the name or they want like the validation or that kind of thing. But that doesn't necessarily mean success. You see a lot of like sad people.
Yeah.
You see a lot of like miserable people in this industry. You really need to define like what makes you like happy and how like, you know, what makes you happy within your own work as well. Like how, you know? Yeah.
I think I remember again kind of internship time for me, seeing those people that are just really miserable, and then sort of my first couple of years in the fashion industry, so many people that are like, yeah, no, I'm just doing this so I can get to here, and then I'm going to do this so I can get to here, and then you realise they never stop doing that, and it's like, well, when are you here?
Yeah.
You know, because if you're not enjoying the thing that you're doing, you know, you guys are wanting to come here, you are here. So focusing on the thing you're doing right now is so valuable. It's bloody hard, really hard. And I'm sure as soon as you're on degree as well, and if you're having offers, and if you're having all these potentials, and you've got people around you that are doing loads of other things, it's like, it's a really hard thing to keep your own perspective and not look out. And I think that's really good advice, just to go to an exhibition, go and have a nap, you know, not in the middle of class. But, you know, make your choices, you know, and there's another day.
Yeah.
My partner always says that, like, tomorrow's another day.
Yeah.
It's like, it's so true. It used to really annoy me. It's like, you're unsatisfaction.
Yeah.
It's like, actually, it's true, completely true.
Yeah, at the end of the day, it is just clothes. I remember Chris used to tell me this all the time. He's like,
yeah.
Oh, you know, it's the end of the day, it's just like clothes. It's not that big of a deal. You really aren't like saving any lives.
Literally. Every time I said that, I'd be like, how dare you?
Yeah. I try to like keep the perspective too. Like when I go home and I like talk to my family about what I'm doing, they really have no clue.
Yeah.
They just don't care.
Yeah.
And you know, there's like a totally, there's a life outside of this, and you also have to kind of like remember that.
You need to remind yourself.
Also like keep, make friends with people who don't do fashion.
Yes.
Really, like meet loads of different kinds of people, because if you just surround yourself with like the same kind of thing, you can feel very trapped. and
it's pretty dangerous.
It's very dangerous. There's a lot of like pressure in that. So
plus you will think you're the best people in the world, and you're not. And you know, there's everything else going on out there, and you know, that's all existing at the same time as you. So it's kind of, again, really important.
Also, at the end of the day, like, no one really cares. The only person who cares is you. You care the most. So it's hard to think, like, oh, fuck, I'm like, fuck this up, and everyone's gonna think I'm a failure. But really, no one really gives a shit. That's my best advice. So try to, like, remember that and, like, you know,
So be happy in the fact that no one gives a shit. That's the goal.
No, people are inherently you're self-indulgent. That's inherently like how people are. So even if someone, you know, there's all like you, I hate this like the kind of like cancel culture too. And you see someone like everyone's like, yeah, they like suck. But at the end of the day, like 3 months later, no one is thinking about that. No one cares. Yeah. Like no one really cares.
So true. And fashion, it changes every 2 seconds.
Yeah.
And it's the same for you. Projects, they last literally 2 seconds. And it's like, hey, this one's shit, move on. Or this one's amazingly successful, the next one might be shit.
Yeah.
It's like, it just zigzags. Because you can't always switch on that creative energy. And if you're feeling a bit run down, you just can't make it come. It doesn't happen. And it's like, okay, well, I got through it, next one.
Yeah. We're creative people, so, you know, exactly, you can't just, like, turn on the ideas. You're not, like, a machine.
Yeah.
I really think it's, like, crazy that people work in this industry and they produce, like, 700 collections a year.
Yeah.
People just don't work like that. You can't just be coming up with, like, the next best innovative thing, like, every 2 seconds. So I think, you know, again, it's just really important to kind of take your time, find what, like, makes you happy. Like, I found that I actually, like, really love doing knitwear design. Like, I love like programming, and it's actually something really nerdy, but I really enjoy doing it. For the machine.
Yeah.
It makes me feel like I'm in the Matrix or something. So that's something I enjoy, and I always look forward to that part in like whatever project I'm doing. So, you know, you find like what you enjoy.
Because there's loads of crap, I'm sure you don't enjoy. Like, it's just so much organization and so much kind of boring, laborious stuff that just has to happen. So you have to find time for that programming
that
for you. But whatever it is you love, you've got to kind of make sure you embellish that.
Yeah.
Questions? Yeah.
Did you really get anxious, like, from the work you're interning? How do you deal with it?
Do you get anxious when you're working with people?
And in the internship, and how do you deal with
it?
I'm anxious right now. You get stressed all the time. Like, you learn to deal with it. You get stressed all the time. There's always something thinking, like always some call going, and like you like either learn to tune it down, or you just like right now, like when you guys are talking, there were so many things that I was like, oh my god, that's a really good idea, I'm gonna do this, I'm gonna do this. And like you just learn to like take it and you just put it there. You put it back and you're just like, okay, you organize it for later, but like you never stop. It's a blessing and it's a curse, but but you learn.
But
how
it's
to deal
like
with
you
it.
Said, you don't have to tune into every one of those voices.
Yeah.
I think almost every single person I know, and they work in all different creative industries, all of them suffer with some level of anxiety, depression, whatever it is. They have something, and probably most of you do. It's really normal in creative industries. I think it's how we're wired somehow.
Yeah.
And so you get to. And it, like you said, it's a blessing and a curse. Like, I have ADHD, so my brain never shuts up. And it's, like, amazing for in the day when you're producing. But you go to bed, you're like, shut up.
Yeah.
I want to sleep now. Yeah. But you have to work out how to dial out, dial in. And it's like, do what you said, go to an exhibition. Go for a walk in a park. Go see friends that are not related to fashion. See your parents or your family who can be like, yes, dear. You know, like, it's really not important. Why are you getting stressed about it?
Yeah.
But it just, it's everything else. It's like, do those other things. Just, everything seems bigger in the moment, but actually when you step outside for a second, it's just not that big.
Yeah. Take care of yourselves. And,
and
like, really, again, like, it's so true. There's such a huge, like, if you're creative, you're almost in here. There's loads of, like, mental health issues in, like, our industry. I think it's so important that, like, you really take care of yourself.
Yeah.
And if you feel like you can't handle something, it doesn't mean that you're weak. Like, you seek help or like talk to someone seriously, because it is like really, really important. You see it all the time, and I don't know, it makes me really upset.
Absolutely, and you know, the conversation about that is open now. You know, people, we are open to talking about it, and especially within UAL, it's loads of support actually.
Yeah.
Like student support is really, really good. But I think just vocalizing it at all to your friends, so as soon as it comes out of your mouth, as a way you're feeling, it halves.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't go away, but it's already, you're kind of like edging somewhere more positive. And like you were saying, anxiety within an internship as well, is that what you're saying? Also remember, it's just an internship, you're probably working.
Yeah,
yeah,
like just you inevitably,
yeah,
like you will fuck up in an internship. Everyone does, and then you get yelled at, and then like 10 minutes later, your boss is like, "Okay, you need to work on this new thing now." It's just,
or they're like, "Who are you again?"
Yeah,
like, because there's so many interns coming in now, and it's just, I think it will happen at every single stage of your life,
yeah,
and it's the first job you get, and then that's really scary, and
yeah,
you will fuck up there too.
Yeah.
But people are gracious, you know?
Yeah,
like, they are, like, they know where you're at. They know that it's stressful doing what you're doing, so they will give you a break as well.
Yeah.
Oh my God, do not let people talk to you like that. Do not let your boss like talk down to you. Again, I think now too, like, we're in a time where if that happens, you talk to HR, or like you speak to someone, because it is not okay for like that kind of like attitude or that kind of like culture to continue in our industry.
Yeah. It's,
and
very outdated.
It's really outdated, and it's really dumb, and you know, they just won't get people like, you know, they just won't get interns, they won't get help anymore.
And the
word
will spread.
Yeah, word spreads.
It really does. Like, as an intern, I think you have so much power now.
Yeah.
When I was interning, literally no power, but also no social networks of any kind.
Yeah.
So there's no way of sharing it. But, you know, it was a very old school industry,
yeah,
but if it's someone that doesn't make you happy, you leave.
They leave.
You know,
yeah,
and you go and get another internship. You know,
yeah,
there are a million places out there, so don't ever feel trapped. I think that's the thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sure.
Okay, more questions? Anyone? Anything? Yeah.
So both of you are international students, right? How did you manage moving to London and also like, you know, being from Germany and also like, here and all that?
So just that process in every respect.
Like, for, I mean, both of us have like got really, really great friends that are from London. And like, they sort of help you guide like where to go, what to do, like where to go out, you know.
Oh my
what
God,
I mean?
I had no friends in the first 2 years really that I was here. I like didn't know that many people. I was really shy.
Yeah.
And I think that's really hard. And the hardest thing for me to do is start talking to people when you feel like really uncomfortable. And like,
mm-hmm,
even I'm Canadian and I speak English, and coming to London was really intimidating. This is like its own beast. It's like so different than anywhere else you would go in the world. It's really intense. But, you know, again, you're so lucky to be in this environment where there's, like, loads of people who are kind of going through the same thing,
yeah,
as you. Just, like, talk to each other, like, find out, like, things that you have in common, go see things, like, go explore.
Mm.
Like, after I've lived here now for almost 7 years, I still haven't seen everything in London. I still don't know everything. I like,
yeah,
just know.
It's endless.
Yeah, it's an endless exploration. So don't be, like, scared. London's a really cool place, and there's really cool people. And I feel like it's so big that you'll definitely find kind of your place in the city and your kind of like people that you like. There's so many like different,
yeah,
things,
yeah,
that are going on. It's such a like hub for culture that there's definitely something that you'll be able to find and like relate to. But it just takes time. And
yeah,
it's sometimes it can be hard, and you might. I think it's especially for international students, when you come here, it can feel like really lonely and scary because like it's just not what you know. But just like try to find.
I mean, I would say I'm from here, and I live like my parents are like an hour or 2 hours of London. It's still scary.
Yeah.
It's London, you know. Mm-hmm. It's a city, a big motherfucking city, and it's terrifying. And you can easily get lost, and you can just stay in your house, and no one will notice. But you just have to get out, and it's about what you put in so much, you know. It's like you said, you found it really hard for 2 years.
Yeah.
I think like you had loads of friends here kind of almost immediately, but you go, it's peaks and troughs.
Mm.
It's like, it might be fine now, but then you start being, you've got a whole new set of people, it might be difficult then. If it's difficult now, yeah, reach out. You do have to reach out. It's about what you put in. And again, if you don't have anyone here, then you have to speak to all your friends back home and constantly have those pep talks with people as well. I
yeah,
think that's really important.
Check in.
Yeah, because it is tough. it is tough because you're probably exhausted and you've got a million projects. It's like, where's the social life time? But you know, there is these tiny little bits of time, and
yeah.
That's when you have to find those people and those friendships. Yeah.
Going back way earlier, you said something about someone who like showing like you off, Melody Rubop and
Harris Reed.
Sorry, wait, what was that other one?
It was someone's white show that blew up, Harris.
Oh, yeah.
Harris Reed.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, after a major deadline, like, what's the quickest way for you to unwind after it? Because usually there's a lot of, like,
it's a compression tank, yeah.
And you've been going for, like, so long on this one item, and you've got so many thoughts going. Like, how do you stop the processes? Like, what's your coping mechanism?
Oh my god, I just sleep.
Mine's mine's really bad. I like go out.
Yeah, go out.
Like,
yeah.
Like just like wind it out.
Yeah.
Because you've got a lot of energy, dance it out. And then you go to bed. And you don't think about everything.
I think it's interesting because it is, you always kind of going up, like,
yeah.
And then it just drops. Yeah. And then up, and then drop. And it is really difficult. I definitely did your route. I couldn't sleep. But it's. But you kind of have, because the energy's all still there, and it's got to go somewhere. So yeah, dance it out is usually the best thing.
Yeah.
But everyone has their own way, I think. Are you able to just switch off and sleep?
Yeah, that's just like kind of me. I can like sleep whenever. But again, I do the same, like I'll go out or I'll see friends. I just stop thinking about it. I like distance myself. I actually don't even look at it.
No.
I don't even
look
at the
phone. Yeah.
Once your deadline's done, like just
run away.
Run
literally
away.
Just bag it up.
Oh my god.
And when you're ready, come back to it and look at it. But
I used to leave as the show was happening. Done. Right, because everyone wants to talk to you about done.
Being indecisive, like in like what you want to choose for your BA and stuff.
Choosing depression.
You just really need to figure out who you are as a person at this stage. Obviously, you're not going to know fully who you are as a person, but like at this stage, you figure out like, what do I like? What are my strengths? What are my weaknesses? And then when you figure that out, then the choice just makes itself, really.
And there's also room for change.
Yeah.
Don't feel like you're stuck in your decision, even if you make it onto that course. I know loads of people who switch courses and like move around. Even from different disciplines, like I know loads of people who even transferred from FCP onto fashion menswear, or vice versa, people coming from fine art. Like, don't feel so like you're trapped in your decision. You'll know pretty instantly once you start your BA if this is something that you like want to continue doing or not. But definitely like, go into it with like an open mind, because you also might start a BA that you felt like, oh man, like this isn't what I want to do, and absolutely love it.
Yeah.
So.
I think it's kind of remembering as well that you're the ones in power here. Like, you're effectively employing CSM. You know, you're paying them for this. You're paying us for this. You know, you get to make the choices. Like you said, you do get to move. You do get to kind of make changes. But you know, we're on hand to get all your peers, all your friends to kind of say, I've got between this and this. You know, you might not get your first choice as well. Like, that is a strong possibility. There are so many people applying. So, you know, I know this happens every single year that students choose one thing, like, that's all I'm doing, I'm not doing it yet, this is where it's going to be, blah, 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 and it's like, you didn't get it. You know, it's such a silly kind of thing to think. And just be open to, because like you said, you've got multiple sides to what you're interested in. You're not one thing. You know, you're not just neat. You like so many other aspects of your creative practice, and you might have gone a different route and ended up in the same place. You know, I think you always end up where you want to go eventually. You know, and there's a lot of pressure on the BA choice. I appreciate that, but don't feel kind of trapped into only one thing.
Yeah, like just don't force it. If it doesn't feel right, it might not be right, but like just don't force it. Nothing should feel like I need to do this, I need it, or else I'm gonna fail. Like, it should just for me, things just came naturally.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
If you don't get into a fact, like, a lot of times it's like, if I didn't get something, it would be like, there's a reason why I didn't get it.
Mm.
You know, there's a reason why someone thought it wasn't right for me. And then you can see it and you get it. And then, like, you're like, whatever, I'm going to do this thing now. And it's better for you, you know?
Yeah.
So, it'll happen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
More questions in the back. You mean in a kind of from the beginning of the degree, almost. So, what are you actually doing in England?
What the hell do we do?
It's for the BA at CSM. Again, like what you'll find, especially if you do your BA at CSM in any pathway, is it's very self-led. Like it's very, you have to be very independent. So no one's going to show you the way. Like you don't really even get taught how to knit or do anything. But you have to kind of like be that voice to then ask. So, you know, we have, in the knitwear pathway, we have like our knit room and there's like machines and stuff. And if you don't know how to do anything, just ask.
So you have technicians.
And they teach you how
they're
to
like best friends.
Yeah, basically. Yeah. They teach you how to like, you know, work through techniques or like work on the machine. And the same with like pattern cutting. So on BA knitwear, it's fashion. So it's not just textiles. But you're designing like textiles simultaneously, which relates to your clothes, and you can do both menswear or womenswear. There's no like set thing. You can switch in between. Like it's really open. And you have like, so you'll either have like a textile focus project or a cutting focus project, and then nearing your second year, you'll have those two kind of combined. So you'll have like, you know, you'll design a collection which you're making textiles for and the final flip garment. So it's all kind of like slowly building, you know, like the skills and like ideas towards like when you get to your final year and you make a collection.
I'd say it's worth adding as well, like it's something to think about when you make your choices for BA. Any course you end up within CSM, certainly you're not getting that load of tutor time. You know, if you're somebody that feels like you need more nurturing and you don't have the confidence and you feel like, you know, you want a bit more hands-on time with your tutors, there are so many other courses out there that might be more relevant to you. You know, I didn't study at CSM for that very reason. You know, I came to him and I was like, oh, I'm not ready yet. And, you know, I went somewhere else that I had every single day I had interaction with tutors. And I built my education how I wanted it, and I loved it. And it's like, it's different strokes for everybody. And I think, you know, every year, the foundation cohort all end up in slightly different places. And Westminster's a big one for people. You get a lot more time again, and one of my students from here I'm always in contact with from there, and she loved that, that hands-on time and that constant learning, because you guys are teaching yourselves a lot.
Yeah.
You're still getting skill exchange, obviously, from technicians and from tutors, but just less of that.
I think like the most important thing that I've learned in BA is like asking your friends for help as well, because your friends also know a lot. Like I have some nerdy friends who just love YouTube, and like they learn how to knit on YouTube.
Yeah.
And then like you like ask them like, oh, I want to do this technique, like do you know how to do it? And like they'll help you figure it out.
Yeah.
You know, like I think like we're like not just relying on tutors. Like if they're not available or something, ask your friends and they can help you as well.
And I'm certainly vocalizing that to you now. You know, we did group tutorials on Monday. The reason, because you need to respond to each other. It's not just what I say. It's you might have inspiration for each other. You might have advice. You might know an artist that I'm unaware of. And you know, it's about everyone that surrounds you and getting as much exchange in that process. Okay, more questions? Yeah.
You learn domestic knitting. Then there's this machine called the Dubié. So you learn how to like, it's more of an industrial machine where you learn how to Dubié knit as well. And then you learn pattern cutting and like stitching and sewing and all the ways to do that. Pretty much like as you got further and further, your clothes tend to look more and more professional. Like when I first knitted, it was on the domestic and it looked like ranky dank, like I would throw it away in a second. And now
like
hot glue gun, yeah, yeah. Like I would, like, hot glue gun was my best friend, and now like, I can actually finish a garment, like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You learn how to do ribs and stuff, and like basic finishes that are like really, you wouldn't think about, like you'd be like, that's boring, but it makes your garment look so much better. So like that's the kind of stuff that you,
I think it's interesting to add to that, the hot glue gun being your best friend, because even at this stage, you know, you don't technically know how to put things together yet. And I'd say probably in your first year as well, it's not the most important thing. The important thing is to get your vision out there. And if your design vision is some giant concoction of things that you've got no idea how to logically or technically put that together, hot glue gun, staple it, it doesn't matter. Get it together to your vision. That's kind of the point. Be innovative about how you do it, but those skills come, right, with time,
yeah.
And that's kind of the point.
And like on the BA too, it's very project led. So every project you do is just progressing you forward with different skills. So for you'll do a pattern cutting project, and that's where you learn pattern cutting. It's not like you don't have like necessarily classes,
yeah,
which are just, it's always the end result is like a garment or you know, like design work. It's never just like, oh, today we're gonna teach you how to pattern cut a jacket. It's,
mm,
it's not really,
yeah,
like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You learn through experience.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's good that way.
Yeah.
On the what?
On YouTube.
YouTube.
On YouTube, yeah.
Yeah.
So
it's kind of a bit like, you know,
my love. No, of course.
Like
real
talk, yeah.
Yes. 100%, like, I get it. But that's like, so the initial stuff, like, they will teach you the basics, they will help you along if you're struggling on a certain project and you don't know how to knit something. But a lot of the things, like, you just have to figure out yourself. And I think, like, yes, you might be paying an institution a lot of money to do that, but I also think that's a really good way for you to learn. Like, teaching yourself how to teach yourself is really, really important.
Yeah.
Like, if you don't understand something in the future after you've graduated and you don't have someone to go to, teaching yourself how to do it is, like, really, really important. So I think,
yeah,
like, there in itself lies a lesson, but at the same time, I think it is crazy that you pay so much money for something that, like, you can't learn, you know?
I think the reason why they do that, and it's an important reason, is they're not gonna, like, hold your hand through everything you do. You kind of, like, you find new ways to do things, because there is, you know, there's always, like, a very direct path, like, if you know how to pattern cut or you know how to knit or whatever, but if you're teaching yourself, you find, like, different ways of doing things, and actually you can discover, like, a lot of, like, interesting different, like, techniques that you wouldn't necessarily have if you had, like, these, like, one-on-one lessons of people showing you exactly how to do stuff.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like going outside of the rules, but you wouldn't necessarily go outside of those rules if you were just given the initial, like, basic.
And do you think
tools
that prepared you for your industry experience,
yes,
that you've had?
100%. I feel like I, like, developed so much more as a designer just because I had to, like, think so independently and, like, figure things out on my own. And you experiment more and you find out, like, new and different ways to do things. And that really helps too when you go to these, like, when you go and you start working or you're working, like, as an intern, because, like, you're bringing something, like, or a new way to do things that they wouldn't know because they have a specific way of, like, doing,
yeah,
things.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. And I think that it's a platform too, this place, you know, it's like, you know, CSN is a brand, and when you come out and your final show, and, you know, there are loads of shows, not everyone gets loads of attention, but, you know, there is, it's a recognisable name, you know, and I think that is part of that process as well, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you graduate from CSM, you've got that brand on your CV, it carries you a little bit further as well.
Yeah, but then don't think that, like, you know, if that's not what you want, then don't do it.
No.
Like, if you want to be learning something that's a bit more practical and you feel like, oh, I know what I want to do, but I really need, like, the skills to do it.
Yeah.
There's so many other courses to do that. There's so many different ways,
yeah,
to, like, go about it. So,
absolutely.
Yeah.
And it doesn't limit you. I think, you know, I'm very aware that CSM is a flag and it kind of flies above you a little bit in terms of your progression. I didn't have that. I did everything I wanted to do in my career. I'm still doing it. And, you know, when I started teaching here, like, 6 years ago, I was a bit like, hold on, I didn't study here. And I felt a bit fraudulent for a moment, but actually, it's not really the point. It's kind of whatever gets you to industry and what prepares you in the way that you need to be prepared. I think that's what it's really about. That's what you need to gain from your education. So CSN might not be the right place, and that's totally fine. You know, there are a lot of other courses. And, you know, I think it's making that choice for you at that time, being open. More questions? We have a couple more questions. I'm just going to go for one at that first. Yes.
The best thing I've done so far?
In terms of like...
like work?
Habits.
Like habits?
So, elaborate a bit more. So...
sorry.
Okay.
Like, what's like the best thing you kind of have done on the course that like helps you?
Like a process.
Like going to exhibitions or whatever. The library. I love the library. There's so much good stuff in there. You know, actually, like, people pay CSM to like go and use that library because it's such an amazing source. Like, I see loads of like people from like Louis Vuitton, Dior, all these guys, and they like pay the school money to just use the library because it's such an amazing resource. It's like one of the few like resources in the UK that has such a like strong focus on like fashion and textiles and art, and you have like a plethora of like really amazing books. So I always find it really inspiring, and I always start there in the library as like a way to kind of like start my design.
And just as an environment to be in as well, it feels really productive to working.
Yeah, absolutely. Me? One of my biggest things that whenever I start a project is like I started using boards. Like, I love boards. I love a board. Like, mood boards are so not chic, but like they're so chic. Like, you just put all your research and like you can organize it and you can see everything, and you're like, you get the vision that you're trying to achieve. Like, that's how I start.
Yeah.
You know.
And then what's quite interesting about that is one of your projects coming up kind of breaks down that whole process. So, you worked in sketchbooks, right?
Yeah.
I think, which is kind of mood boarding process, but it dismantled in slightly different ways. So, you guys are going to be learning that whole mood board process, but then translating into sketchbook. So, you will be kind of getting that. But do you want to talk more about kind of that process a little bit? Because I think some of them are not really aware of it.
Yeah, because like, so with a sketchbook, everything's very linear. Like, you see how you get from one to another to another to another. Whereas, like, with a board, everything's presented at once. So like, and you can sort of like connect your own dots, and like you can organize it like, okay, like I want all of this one technique for this category, and you can put it there, and physically that's shifted in one place, and like you can physically organize, which instead of like keeping it in your mind, and then like when you show someone else, it's just very clear. It's very, very easy.
I think like, especially as creative people, like I'm like super dyslexic, and I find it really hard to organize my ideas sometimes. So it's just about finding a way that works for you. Mm. So like I am a very visual person, so I do the same. Like I'll have like all of my like research or like, you know, samples like out in the ground, and just like seeing it all together, it kind of makes more sense. Because when you just like have them like individually or like dotted around, or just like in a book, sometimes you don't see the whole thing. So sometimes, you know, open up your book, like take your like research images and like place them aside and kind of like create your own stories.
Yeah. Like, don't be precious with your sketchbooks.
Exactly what you're saying, communicate visually. Like, everyone I was speaking to on Monday in group tutorials, the ones that didn't have visuals to communicate, it just doesn't happen. You know, you can't explain these things away. You need visuals to show what you're talking about. And that's drawings, samples, manipulations, anything. It just has to be there as a visual. One more question over here.
Just from like a student perspective, what do you find? You kind of hear about other things in the courses and pathways. But do you kind of, obviously, it's kind of when you're going to pass it, and if that kind of stuff, and if you have also many differences in terms of like necessarily
what's the
fundamental differences between the pathways from your perspective, I suppose? So you must know people on other.
I think especially so, like, you gotta think about what you want to learn and how you want to like progress as a designer. So say for example, like, you're interested in menswear, and you're really into like details, you really want to know about tailoring, you really want to know about like fit and that kind of thing, you apply for the menswear course. But then if you are like interested in menswear, but you also have like an interest in like fabrication and like developing textiles and that kind of. There's like print and knit, and there's also FDM,
mm-hmm.
and those are like other courses which also you can focus on menswear, but then you can also focus on like what goes on around it, not just like the tailoring and like the pattern cutting, but also like a bring it into perspective. But there's like really major differences that between each course, and it's because of like the project that you learn. So knitwear is very much knit focused.
Mm-hmm.
It's very much like a hands-on make course. If you don't have like a interest really in like making, I wouldn't do knitwear. And it's the same with print. Like that's also very like make focused, but it's in a kind of like different way. And you learn a lot more pattern. It's a lot more like pattern cutting focused on print as well.
And print is very like, you almost are like a chemist when you're a print, because you need to like learn how to mix the paint, the binders, mix how to like do your dyes properly. Like you learn all these techniques in print. And then in knit, you learn all a completely different set of techniques. Like every single pathway, you learn something completely different.
Mm-hmm.
It's not to say that you're bound to that. Like in knit, we learn how to print, and we learn to sew, and we know how to do what they're doing, and they know how to do what we're doing. But like,
it's not the focus.
It's not the focus. Yeah.
Woman's wear is very, again, like cut focused.
Yeah.
It's very much about like draping and cutting and pattern cutting. So if that's also something that interests you, you really focused on like woman's wear. But you know, like, you're interested in like how fabric works on the body, like also tailoring, then I would do women's wear.
Yeah.
And then men's wear, and FDM is like everything.
It's like, yeah, it's sort of like taking like the image of a brand and seeing how you can manipulate that, like, stuff. So like, you have like, when you're in FDM, you've got to like consider the hangers, consider how you're displaying it, consider like for your crit. So like, and consider like the set and everything. So like, that's what's really important in FDM, as well as the clothes. So you all learn that. You learn pretty much every pathway in your own pathway.
I think there's only one misconception I think that students generally feel about FDM, is that it's so marketing heavy, which is so wrong. I mean, it means marketing in a visual communication kind of way. So exactly what you're saying, right? So the show, the hanger appeal, the kind of everything that surrounds the garment, not doing an entire marketing report for every project. That's not happening.
No.
I think there is a, you know, you're going to have a touch of marketing in there, but it does not dominate. Right?
And it's not necessarily commercial as well.
No.
I think people think like if you do FDM, it's because you want to become a really commercial designer, but really what doing FDM is like understanding your voice as a designer and like understanding like who you're communicating to. So like, you might be more of an artist and you see your work in a gallery instead of on a runway. So that's like, you know, you see a lot of that in FDM as well. It's not necessarily people who are just making like clothes ready for the market. It's people who are also like very art focused.
Really good. Okay, we're going to round up there. Thank you very much. Okay, so you guys don't go anywhere. We're going to be doing an activity.